Hello again, and welcome to On Mic with Jordan Rich. This is a podcast for and about voice actors or anyone interested in the most fascinating of instruments, the human voice. And we've branched out and have been talking to people about film and music. We've been talking to performers of all kinds and those who mentor, those who teach. Today's guest is certainly one of those. She is Warner Laughlin, who's been coaching on set and privately for more than 20 years. She studied, as you'll hear, with Lee Strasberg and Sonia Moore and Michael Kahn, some really great teachers. And she opened the Warner Laughlin Studios back in 96 and has since worked with and helped shape the careers of some very big names in Hollywood. From Oscar, Emmy, and Tony nominees and winners, Warner is known as a star among the stars. And today we'll be talking about her new book and a whole lot more. Of course, I invite you to subscribe, download, rate, and review this podcast when you can. Certainly hoping to spread the word. And now my conversation with Warner. Well, I'm so happy to invite you to the podcast, to have you take me up on my invitation, Warner, because you have such an amazing reputation in the field. And I guess, I don't even know if I have to guess, I know that you love what you do.
I do. I adore it. And I thank you so much for having me on your podcast. I love this podcast.
Well, thank you.
Fascinating people.
Seems as though with all the big name actors and up and coming performers that you're helping to build and helping to create their persona, it must be a real kick to see your people after they graduate, quote unquote, do amazing things. It must make you proud.
It is such a joy to watch them go from just beginning their careers to literally soaring. It just makes my heart smile.
Do you have a sense when you meet someone, whether it's someone well-known or literally off the street, whether they have it, if we can define what it is?
Isn't it such a hard thing to define? It is. Yeah. It's kind of like trying to describe love, I suppose. But you do get a sense of people. I have been fooled. There's one gentleman who was in class for a bit, and I thought, oh, goodness, I don't know, you know. And this kid worked and worked. He was there every week. He had done his full circle homework every week. He was bound and determined, and to this day, now, he's a working actor. But he really put the time in. It takes putting the time in to do it, just like anything, really.
Right. It is a practice, and with practice, you never really quite reach nirvana. You really shouldn't. You're as good as your last broadcast or show. But with acting, it's an evolutionary practice. How did it happen for you? Did you start out first as an actress and then move into the teaching end?
I did. I was an actress for years. I was born and raised in North Carolina, a little tiny town way up in the mountains. The first play I ever saw, I was in. I graduated Chapel Hill and moved immediately to New York, just bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, no idea what I was doing. And believe it or not, my first job was a voiceover job.
I'm not surprised. That's an actor's milieu, no question about it. Do you recall what it was for?
It was an AT&T commercial, Reach Out and Touch. Remember
those? I sure do, yeah.
Yeah, just by hook or crook, I got that job. But I had such a heavy, heavy accent that acting-wise, it was hurting me a bit. There was one casting director. Her name was Susan Scudder, and she was a casting director for All My Children. And for some reason, I got this audition with her, and I walk in, and I do my thing, and stops, and she looks at me, and she tilts her head, and she goes, you know, you're a really, really good actress, but you are completely unhirable.
Oh, thanks.
Right. And she goes, I'm going to take a red pen, and I'm going to circle every word in the sides that you said wrong, basically, just because of my just because of my accent. And so she did, and she said, when you can learn to talk right, come back and see me. And I did, and consequently, she helped me get an agent. She introduced me to managers. She hired me. I owe her a lot.
Mentors are so important in any profession, but I think in the world of acting and performing, there is something to be said for, I'm going to say, copying or mimicking or paying homage to those who came before us. I tell my students in voiceover, don't be ashamed about copying or mimicking a style because they've perfected a style, some of these people. Let me ask you about your early training, because did I see one of your teachers was one of the venerable great teachers, Lee Strasberg? Am I reading that right?
He was indeed. He was... a frightening man. Can I say that? He was terrifying.
I would imagine. I mean, I remember Godfather 2. He was pretty scary, but that was an acting gig. As a teacher, what was it like? Was it really shuddering to be in his presence? Or?
It was. You felt like you might not do right, you know? I remember he looked at me one day and he goes, "Why are you in this class? You're so young. You have no life experience. You don't." And I thought, not true. Since that time, Lee is all about the method. And my book is all about getting away from the method and getting into imagination-based work, because I found the method to be psychologically harmful. I also discovered that when I moved to L.A. and started working in front of the camera, that I couldn't repeat a take after take after take. So this was a problem when you're on set and you've got you're going to do that scene 82 times, basically.
Yes, thank you for that, because as you explain in the book, which is terrific, by the way, the Warner-Laughlin technique, as you explain in the book, being a theater actor, and I've done a lot of stage work, it's in-the-moment stuff, and then it moves on to the next moment. There's no stopping and redoing, as opposed to either voiceover or screen, where you literally could do the same thing. You're caught in sort of a loop.
Exactly. You're going to be doing that scene take after take after take on set, and you have to get to that emotion take after take on set, which is so different than theater, where we just feel that perhaps, once a night.
You know, it's interesting. I get the sense, just by talking to you, and we've just met on the phone, and this is a very mechanical way to meet somebody, and I'd love to meet you in person, but you sound like a very sweet, loving person, and you do talk about the need for empathy in teaching and understanding and learning. Let's explore that a little bit, because you're not Lee Strasberg redone here. I can just tell.
Oh, that is so kind of you to say. I found that, old schools of thought, or I guess what we're used to really in acting class, is where teachers will break you down, make you cry, crumble you, crush you, just to build you back up. But that never worked with me back in my days as an actress when I was in class, and it's just not who I am. I found that if you empower actors, I don't even teach from the don'ts, because if I tell you, Jordan, don't do this, don't do that, what you're going to do when you get up and do your scene is you're going to be focusing on what you should not do, which therefore makes you do it, right? So I simply take what you shouldn't be doing and I replace it with what you should be doing. And once you're doing what you need to be doing, it becomes habit. It lives in your body and you progress much more quickly that way. So beating someone down never really worked for me, and I assumed it wouldn't for anybody else. So I think that's why I teach the way I do.
So people can discover that talent and that ability within them without having to, like you say, crumble into a ball of tears and have therapy that runs afoul of their paycheck. They can't keep up with the therapist. I mean, it means really exploring the fun that is acting, isn't it?
It should be joyous. Getting inside somebody else's skin and looking through their eyes at the world should be just a blast. It should be so much fun. For me, it's an escape. So, yes, it shouldn't be torture. I wanted to name the book Myth of the Tortured Actor. That got debunked, but...
Well, one of the things that's clear is that it's not just ethereal discussion here. You have a lot of exercises that you share with readers. Maybe we could just talk about a couple of those kinds of things that people can think about and do using the voice, using the body to better express themselves. What would be an example of that?
An example of that in my technique might be emotion with detail, which is one of the latter steps. When I'm building a character, I'm really interested in what makes that character tick. And usually those answers lie in the childhood of the character. We have something that we like to call base human emotion, which is the overwhelming, overriding emotion caused by an event in the child's past that caused the child to perceive the world in kind of a unique way. It's think of it like the springboard or the filter in which the character views the world. And everybody views the world slightly differently, right? So instead of taking our own emotions, our own past, our own tragedies, and building on that, we invent it for a character. And then using what I call emotion with detail. And what that is exploring almost in real time in your imagination what event the character lived through in that young life. And we explore events starting at, say, 3, 4, 5 years of age, and then incrementally experience the emotionally pertinent events in that character's life. Does that make any sense?
Well, the question is, it does make sense. And the question that I think a lot of people have is, what's different between that and the method, let's say? And I think I know the answer now because you've explained it well, but let's go a little further. In the method, it's you that you have to figure out. It's, forget about the character, it's what's gone on in your life, correct?
Exactly. And to me, it's much more interesting to see the character on screen than just another version of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
In my own life, I used to use the method until it was just unimaginably painful. To the point that it was, I can't do this anymore. If I want to continue being an actress, I have to find another way. In college, my boyfriend, Jimmy, wonderful, wonderful guy, he was a year older than I was, and he left the beginning of my senior year, and he was on his way out to California to meet a friend of ours, and we promised to write and call every day. And being a man of his word, Jimmy did. And one morning, I'm lying on the couch because I was cramming for exams, and I wake up, and everyone around me is in tears. I found out that Jimmy had been killed by a drunk driver, head-on collision in Malibu.
Mm.
Just devastating. But now the method says that you take something like that and you use it in your work. In other words, when you want to feel an emotion that's similar to that, I would go back in my past, and I would dredge that feeling up, and I would use it in the moment. The problem with that is that so many times, and human nature says, that we go, oh, no, 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 don't do that. Oh, no, don't go there, which is a problem when you hear the word action because you don't want to go there. You don't want to experience it, and that's just the way we're built. We shouldn't have to re-experience tragedies. We're meant to experience those things in real life, heal from them, learn from them, and then move on.
Let me move on to another question that's sort of important to what I do, and that is, as a voiceover actor and artist, I'm always considering the audience. Who is the audience? Who's the receiver? Does that come into play when you're an actor on a stage or a screen set as well?
Maybe not as much as in voiceover, because you're embracing the character, and it will be perceived by so many different people from all different walks of life. I think, at least to me, in voiceover work, we are speaking to a specific kind of audience for a specific reason, right? In a way?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
I was just thinking about the fact that even playing certain characters in commercials or in narration, there's always the question, well, who is ultimately going to be listening to this? But it's more targeted as opposed to a television or movie event where it's, as they say, pardon the expression, general audiences.
True. You're right.
Indeed. One of the things, too, that's interesting about your work, well, there's a lot of interesting things about the Warner-Laughlin technique, is that, well, we don't have to have people becoming professional actors to gain benefit from what you're saying. How does this work for the average person, even if they're not necessarily on their way to Hollywood or Broadway? What does this do for their own personality?
I've heard a lot of people say, oh, my goodness, I never understood my husband until now. I've heard people say, I hated my sister, now I understand where she's coming from. So that empathy factor, I think, when we start looking objectively at other people and what they've experienced in life, kind of starts to shine through and helps us that way a bit too.
Have you studied, I'm sure you have, the changes in style? If you look at old movies from the 30s, even 40s, you have that sort of stiff cosmopolitan approach. And then Brando comes along and everything becomes sort of laissez-faire and wild and seething under the surface. And then you get the 70s with the Pacinos and the De Niros. Where are we right now in terms of general entertainment, in terms of the acting style? How would you define it?
I think it's more free and easy now. Like you said, we've seen over the years how we've gone from that stilted kind of 40s style, which is kind of, still kind of fun to do and play with. But now we see more slice of life, real people. Look at Three Billboards, that kind of
movie
that's, we see real people, like not even pretty people like we used to see, which is really kind of nice, isn't it?
It is. It's, and that leads me to my next question. Acting is a beautiful thing for so many people and so much fun to do for even somebody like me. But the question is physicality. If one looks like one of your students, Ryan Reynolds, well, that's a pretty good look. But I think it's cool when you have actors who don't look like actors. Wallace Shawn, the great character actor, always comes to mind. Or Richard Jenkins or people like that. They look like us. Those are the people I have the most admiration for because they're able to get it done. But I just want you to provide some advice for people who may not have the, quote, look that some people think they have to have.
Don't make the mistake of thinking that you have to be pretty people. The industry needs you, who you are, the unique you, just exactly like you are, rather than try to be something you think that they want, just be you. I mean, if you've got, thinning hair, or you feel like you might be a bit plump, or you might, there's a place for every single type of actor out there. And I think it's important to steer away from the idea of, oh, I have to be this, oh, I have to be that. I'm not perfect enough to do it. Not true. Concentrate on your craft.
Hey, thanks for listening to the show On Mic with me, Jordan Rich. We'll get right back to it in a moment. I wanted to remind you, you'll find links to my website and Facebook page in the show notes. Reach out to me anytime. I'd love to hear your ideas for future shows and guests and topics. And if you happen to have a free moment, I'd love for you to rate and review the podcast in all the important places we hang out, including Apple, Android, Google Play, Stitcher, and more. That'll go a long way in helping us build an audience and keep the studio humming with interesting content. And now, back to more On Mic with me, Jordan Rich. I think the fact that you're a confidence builder, along with everything else, makes a great difference in the lives of your students.
Thank you.
I mean, I know with me, and I just teach occasionally here in my little studio, if you don't give somebody the support, if you're just knocking them down and saying they'll never make it, or not giving them positive feedback as well as constructive feedback, they're not going to go very far.
I always say it's important to give them wings, not weights, right?
Oh, I love that.
I can walk out on the street right now and take any, I say this in the book because it's so true, that I can walk out on the street and take anybody walking by, and if they'll give me 4 minutes, believe me, I can make them cry. But does that make them an actor? No.
Mm.
Yeah.
One more thing I'm going to ask you. I don't know if this ever enters into your daily training with actors, but for some of us, it might just be a mental block, but learning lines. I'm so jaded by the fact that I have scripts in front of me when I'm doing voice work every day. I never have to memorize anything. And I, over the years, I've done some shows, and I've had more and more trouble memorizing lines. Any tips?
There's so many schools of thought on this, but I feel pretty strongly. Think of dialogue as thoughts spoken out loud. And if you're thinking of it that way, there are thoughts that the character has, but first you really need to know who the character is, where the character's coming from, what that life of the character has been like up until this present day at time. Now, a lot of teachers say, oh, just memorize it rote, and then you'll be fine, because people are terrified they're going to forget a line, right? But to me, if you memorize rote, it goes into, well, first of all, there's a rote memory section of the brain that's completely different from the section of the brain that deals with concepts, images, language, emotions, and all of that. So if we put lines into the rote section of the brain, they come out in a rote way. We haven't attached any meaning to those lines whatsoever. All we've done is memorize, kind of like the multiplication tables that we do.
Right.
If you ask somebody to say the ABCs out loud, they say it in exactly the same kind of sing-songy way, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we learned that rote as children.
Exactly.
Or even if you ask people to say the Pledge of Allegiance, we memorized that as children, and we learned it in a rote way. It doesn't mean anything to us, right? So if you build the character first, those lines mean so much more to you if you go back and look at your sides or look at the script, so that they have emotional resonance and they have meaning to you now. Much more easy when it comes to memorizing.
Excellent advice for me and others who needed that. And it brings to mind the importance of learning what improv is all about and learning how to think on your feet. And if you know the character, as you're saying, Warner, get to know the character and really study the character and then develop this own character of yours. It's sort of a natural. And even if you forget a line specifically, you'll say the right thing at the right time.
Exactly. You're saying the right thought.
Well, I couldn't detect any of that Carolina accent. It didn't even slip up. I mean, you probably heard my Boston slip in there every once in a while. But you are a delightful lady, and I want to mention that your website is your name, Warner Laughlin, LOUGHLIN.com, and the book is The Warner Laughlin Technique, and you got to love somebody who's not afraid to share what she knows with the rest of the world. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Jordan.
It's been a pleasure, and we now know a bit more about how to act. How to behave? That's another story for another time. You've been listening to On Mic with Jordan Rich, a podcast produced by Chart Productions. Just click the Jordan Rich podcast link at chartproductions.com for more. Please subscribe, download, rate, and review us on Apple and any other podcast platform. Hey, it's great to be with you as always. Thanks for listening. Have a terrific day.